Welcome to a very special edition of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Vita N. Geary, MD, and Leonard G. Gamella, MD, both of Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, to discuss the first multidisciplinary, consensus-driven framework for prostate cancer genetic testing. Born out of the 2019 Philadelphia Prostate Cancer Consensus Conference, the comprehensive guidelines shed light on the evaluation, management, and implementation of genetic testing for men with prostate cancer or men with an increased risk of developing prostate cancer. Notably, the guidelines strongly recommend both germline and somatic genetic testing for all men with metastatic prostate cancer. Additionally, the framework recommends that all men with a family history that could indicate an increased risk of hereditary prostate cancer or other cancers, including breast, ovarian, pancreatic, and colon cancer, should receive reflex testing to determine whether active surveillance or screening is recommended. Listen on to hear Dr. Geary, lead study author of the guidelines and director of the Cancer Risk Assessment and Clinical Cancer Genetics Program and the Men's Genetic Risk Clinic at the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center, and Dr. Gramella, chair of the Department of Urology at Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center, as well as co-chair of the 2019 Prostate Cancer Consensus Conference, discuss the rationale to create these guidelines, the importance of having a multidisciplinary team weigh in on the recommendations, and key aspects of the framework that could have clinical implications for men in this space. Thank you again, Dr. Mellon, Dr. Geary, for taking the time to speak with me and talk about the new guidelines for prostate cancer genetic testing. So to start, could you discuss kind of the unmet needs regarding genetic testing of men with prostate cancer and why you really wanted to establish these guidelines?
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here for this discussion. We hosted the Philadelphia Prostate Cancer Consensus Conference in 2019 at Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center and the Department of Urology at Jefferson, really to address several clinical unmet needs. And I do have to say that this was a team effort co-led by myself, Dr. Gamella, and Dr. Knudsen, and all of the national and international experts who came and were panel participants and lent their expertise to these guidelines. Our initially goal was to really address some of these clinical unmet needs, which were that this is an exciting time for genetic testing for men with prostate cancer, particularly in the metastatic setting where there are now PARP inhibitors approved for the treatment of men with metastatic disease, and also more and more clinical trials that include genetic information for treatment of men. Also, increasingly, there's more data potentially impacting early stage disease for active surveillance discussions, as well as prostate cancer screening or early detection discussions. Importantly, as you know, these genes and testing we're talking about here are cancer risk genes that are hereditary in nature. And so keeping the hereditary cancer risk in mind was also very important. But all of this has led to several clinical unmet needs, which include the rising volume of men in need of genetic testing and genetic counseling, and a relative shortage of genetic counselors to handle that need. There was also variability noted in the testing guidelines from the NCCN that needed to be streamlined. And then that sort of streamlining helps for clarity in practice to be able to address genetic testing for men. We wanted to make sure that we addressed how to perform genetic counseling and genetic testing and models that might be helpful in clinical practices.
Yeah, so our 2019 consensus was really a follow-on from the first consensus we had, the Philadelphia Prostate Cancer Consensus back in 2017. And we really felt, as Dr. Geary mentioned, that it was very important with how rapidly the information is becoming available for genetic and genomic testing in prostate cancer, that understanding the framework of exactly how this information gets disseminated and how our providers actually get educated, not only the educating the provider, but also educating the patients. And again, as Dr. Geary mentioned, we really recognize the growing critical need of genetic counselors when it comes to this very rapidly evolving and very important area of prostate cancer genomic and genetic testing.
You both had talked about the Philadelphia Prostate Cancer Consensus Conference. So going back to November 2019, what were some of the dialogue that emerged from that meeting that you think is important to highlight to sort of put into context these guidelines and what the meeting was all about?
There were some defined goals that we wanted to specifically address as a consensus panel. And the dialogue really emerged out of these goals that we had set forth based on the clinical unmet needs. So the first goal was to really help define optimal genetic testing strategies that incorporate expansion of multi-gene panel testing options, as well as the evolving genetic data. There are multiple types of panels available now for genetic testing, as well as multiple laboratories. So we wanted to make sure that we addressed which panels might be optimal in specific clinical settings and which genes to prioritize for testing based on evolving data. We also wanted to propose consistent genetic testing indications and management, as well as address alternate genetic evaluation models to help address the genetic counseling shortage to really bring this down to the practice level. So therefore, we wanted to develop overall an implementation framework for genetic counseling and genetic testing for men with all stages of prostate cancer, as well as men at risk for prostate cancer, to address treatment and management. And I think some of the very interesting dialogue, and Dr. Gamella can certainly weigh in here too, because I think that that's really where the consensus expertise really showed itself, was the dialogue that emerged in various different categories, such as the genetic data and the strength of the genetic data for prostate cancer risk across the various genes. This came from our research experts as well as our clinical experts. Appropriate genetic testing indications, specifically when it came to pathologic criteria and family history criteria, where the data could have been a little more variable. And then ways to support clinicians in practice, I think, raised a lot of discussion in terms of clinician education about genetic testing and counseling, insurance coverage, cost of testing, and maybe even incorporating genetic assistance into the flow.
Yeah, and certainly a big step forward in this area just happened with the approval of the two new PARP inhibitors, the olaparib and the rucaparib. And I think that really has almost sort of laser focused on the importance of this area, not only for inherited risk, but now we're very rapidly pivoting towards the direction where this precision medicine in the management of advanced prostate cancer is now completely dependent upon high levels of genetic and genomic testing, whether it's inherited genetic risk or genomic instability within the tumor. So again, these two approvals really highlighted how important and how critical and how rapidly evolving this whole world of genetic testing for prostate cancer is becoming.
Multiple different areas of research was included in the conference. So why was it important to include participants from basic science, urology, radiation oncology, epidemiology, among others, to really develop the framework of these guidelines?
So I think we did something very unique in our 2017 conference and our 2019 conference, in the fact that we recognized there is a broad base of understanding and expertise in the field of genetic testing, not just for prostate cancer, but in a whole spectrum of diseases. Certainly breast cancer is really, I think, at least 10 years and possibly 15 years ahead of us in our understanding of prostate cancer. So we have so many different expertise specialization within the area of genetic and genomic testing, both within prostate cancer and outside of prostate cancer. We thought it was very important to have as broad a based participation so we get many different perspectives on this area. Again, this is a very rapidly changing field that's literally changing by the month and sometimes by the week. So bringing in basic scientists, bioethicists, primary care doctors, urologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, genetic counselors, and other basic science researchers, we really felt will give the best package of understanding of the consensus finding and ultimate results.
Yes, and really genetic testing for prostate cancer is not a field in isolation. It is not relevant to just one discipline or another. And as Dr. Gamella said, really requires input from various clinical and research disciplines for presentation of best evidence and synthesis of best evidence to then develop guidelines that are clinically applicable across the specialties where men receive care for prostate cancer treatment, management, or screening.
Yeah, prostate cancer has sort of become a really one of the ideal models for multidisciplinary care. And I think, again, our consensus meeting really demonstrated how important the multidisciplinary input is into making the best decisions for how to use the testing in a man with prostate cancer.
And then getting into the guidelines a little bit more, what questions really served as the basis for the framework of these guidelines?
Yes, so there were a series of overarching questions that served as the basis for the framework, and then there were multiple questions within the overarching questions that helped to guide the actual development of the individual modules of the guideline. But the series of the overarching questions included questions such as which men should be considered for germline testing for prostate cancer, which panels should be considered, and which genes should be prioritized for testing, what specific recommendations should be considered based on genetic results. And very importantly, we then weighed in as a consensus panel regarding what is optimal informed consent for prostate cancer germline testing, as well as what collaborative strategies may facilitate prostate cancer genetic evaluation between healthcare providers and genetic providers. We then also weighed in on what post-test disclosure strategies are most appropriate based on genetic results. And really importantly, to think to the future is what barriers need to be addressed to enhance prostate cancer germline testing. So these were our overarching questions that helped to guide the development of our implementation framework.
So then getting into the guidelines themselves, I know that they're quite extensive and we probably couldn't cover them in the allotted time that we have for this podcast, but could you provide me with some of, you know, maybe the key insights as to what the guidelines include and the most important information, I guess, that people can take away from them?
Yeah, I'm going to let Vita tackle that because she was really the architect of putting the final consensus document together. But in terms of our approach, you know, our last consensus meeting in 2017 really focused on the risk of prostate cancer, a man's risk, who should be tested. We're now morphing 2 years later to much more comprehensive discussions of the spectrum of prostate cancer. We not only addressed issues about early prostate cancer and screening, but now we're getting more involved with treatment decisions. More information's out there about how do we use this information for active surveillance? How do we use this information now for the management of metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer? So in just 2 years, the field has changed very rapidly, and now we've been able to address a much broader platform of how to use genetic testing beyond just the inherited risk aspect that we certainly reviewed again, but there were many more pieces that we now could debate about and comment about in the consensus.
That's exactly correct. And if we get into some of the details of those guidelines, so for example, we actually started out with what is the purpose of testing? So in the metastatic setting, for consideration of targeted therapies or clinical trial eligibility, in the early stage setting for consideration in active surveillance discussions, and in the screening setting for inclusion of genetic information in prostate cancer early detection discussions. So we really took a pivot there in terms of thinking of the clinical role of germline testing. And throughout that stage spectrum, the hereditary nature of testing was reinforced. In terms of actual indications for testing of men, we reached consensus, strong consensus about to test all men with metastatic prostate cancer. This was in agreement with the already existing NCCN guidelines about testing of men with metastatic disease. Where we expanded upon that is how to test men with metastatic prostate cancer, that I'll just come to in just a moment. But we also had indications for testing based on pathologic criteria, such as advanced disease, higher stage disease, higher grade or Gleason score prostate cancer, as well as ductal or intraductal pathology consideration. And then very importantly, we also considered family history and ancestry criteria. So family history indicative of hereditary prostate cancer, or broader family history even indicative of hereditary breast and ovarian cancer or Lynch syndrome. So we really expanded beyond prostate cancer family history to include several other cancers that could be relevant for men and women in families. And Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry was also given consensus endorsement for consideration in terms of which men to test. Very importantly, as I mentioned before, we then weighed in as a consensus on guidelines for optimal informed consent elements. And these elements included discussion of things like the purpose of genetic testing, the potential to uncover hereditary cancer syndromes, possible results that could return, possible cost, the GINA law, Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, and that the potential of impacting families, such as through cascade testing, was also discussed and put into the guideline as well. And then we also then, next step would be in terms of genes to test or priority panels per clinical scenario. So for example, in the metastatic setting, there was a strong agreement for broad, large cancer panel testing of men with metastatic disease that included high priority genes such as BRCA1 and 2, the DNA mismatch repair genes, and other DNA repair genes for therapeutic options and trials. In the non-metastatic earlier stage setting, to at least include BRCA1 and 2, if not other genes based on personal or family history. And then this was also for men without a diagnosis of prostate cancer who were interested in risk assessment. And in this particular scenario, reflex testing was endorsed with moderate agreement because of the potential to link with genetic counseling when testing is originated in healthcare practices, so perhaps in a urology practice, and then having additional testing be able to be performed by a genetic counselor after initial results returned. The guidelines also addressed, as Dr. Gamella mentioned, the consideration of BRCA1 and 2 primarily in the metastatic setting for PARP inhibitor therapy, which two of the PARP inhibitors have now been approved in the treatment of metastatic prostate cancer, as well as DNA mismatch repair genes for anti-PD-1 therapy and clinical trials. BRCA2 was given strong endorsement for consideration in active surveillance discussions, as well as in the prostate cancer screening setting, along with other genes. We also did state that it would be important to refer men with mutations identified on testing to genetic counseling to receive the full gamut of recommendations that are made in that scenario. And then that practices should consider how they're going to handle men who receive results of variants of uncertain significance or men who have a strong family history of cancers in terms of which of those patients to refer to genetic counseling. What we've noted in our studies is that about a third of men who undergo multi-gene testing will have a variant of uncertain significance identified. And so practices just need to think about how they're going to deliver that information and what further needs to be done for those patients in terms of linking with genetic counseling. And then finally, very importantly, we also wanted to discuss access to genetic testing and genetic counseling. And so we did endorse technologies like telehealth, telephone, and video to help increase access to genetic counseling.
Yeah, what's very good is that a lot of the commercial laboratories that are offering these multi-gene panels, most of them do have at least some connection for the opportunity to speak broadly with a genetic counselor. Because again, as was pointed out in our consensus, we really have a very significant shortage right now of genetic counselors who have expertise, in particular in prostate cancer. Most of the genetic counselors that we have around the United States are very skilled in areas such as breast and Lynch syndrome and other inherited conditions. But this area, again, is coming up very rapidly for a lot of genetic counselors as well, as the information is coming out, as noted, at a very rapid rate. So the shortage of genetic counselors really has to be underscored. It's a great field for someone to become involved with. We have a great program here at Jefferson and Thomas Jefferson University that Dr. Geary is involved with, and it's a good area and an area, I think, of significant growth. One thing I like to say is that, so the audience understands, we are very focused on genetic and genomic testing, but when you step back and you look at the average prostate cancer patient who comes in the door with metastatic disease, for example, we're only finding maybe about 20% or so, and Vita, you can correct me if I'm wrong on the numbers, of men who really have identifiable genetic alterations that need some further work, either from a familial testing standpoint or from a therapeutic standpoint. If you take the average patient coming in with prostate cancer, since most prostate cancer is sporadic and a very limited number of cases are inherited or hereditary, it's really about 20%, 25% of men across the board who come in with newly diagnosed prostate cancer that actually need further genetic testing. So in my experience, and again, Vita, you can comment further on this, a lot of men who come in who are concerned, newly diagnosed prostate cancer, but don't have any signals that this might be inherited or an aggressive cancer, if they go to a genetic counselor may do a very detailed family history and say, you know, Mr. Jones, there's really not a reason here for you to undergo genetic testing. And again, we need to reinforce the fact that the majority of patients with prostate cancer do not need this very extensive, detailed genetic testing, at least at this point in time. You know, as we study more and more genes and we look at the so-called tail of genes that have been identified at a very low incidence rate, we might, you know, change our viewpoint on that. But right now, we sort of have the hot list of about 10 or 12 really important genes that appear to be important both from a progression and aggressiveness standpoint as well as an inherited risk standpoint. So again, the majority of men really don't need the genetic testing, but boy, when you find somebody who needs it, it is a major improvement in their outcome.
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, in the metastatic setting, the rates of the germline mutations have been reported around 15 to 17%. And then in the early stage setting, around 5 to 7%. So this isn't in the majority of men with prostate cancer, as Dr. Gamella pointed out. The challenge becomes, who has it? Who has a germline mutation? And in the metastatic setting, those rates are high enough that the NCCN has made a blanket recommendation that all men with metastatic prostate cancer should at least be offered germline testing. Whether each of those men decides to do it or not, or what is the right time point in their clinical care, becomes an important thing to consider on a patient-by-patient basis. But that is the recommendation from the NCCN as well, about testing all men with metastatic prostate cancer based on the reported rates of germline mutations. And in the early stage setting, that's really where it becomes important then to, when we're thinking about which men to consider for testing, is family history, pathologic criteria, ancestry. All of those are additional factors to consider that would raise the pretest probability of potentially carrying a germline mutation. It's true, we test a lot of men and they come back negative. But I think really thinking about which men have the highest pretest suspicion for carrying a germline mutation is where we have to be thinking clinically in terms of offering that to those men who have a higher probability.
So I know that, you know, you did touch on and elaborate a little bit on the family history of prostate cancer and the importance of testing. Is there anything else that you'd like to add regarding the importance of testing men with family history of prostate cancer or other hereditary cancers to receive genetic testing?
As a urologist, we have really been on a mission the last 4 or 5 years, particularly since we've been working closely with Dr. Geary, making urologists recognize the fact that it's no longer about, oh, did your that your father or your grandfather or your brother have prostate cancer. We're asking for much more comprehensive family histories now to see if we have a signal that there may be a DNA repair mutated gene abnormality that's running through the family. So we've encouraged now urologists not only to ask about family history of prostate cancer, but to ask about breast cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, melanoma, GI cancers along the lines of Lynch syndrome. And in that regard, again, to give kudos to our commercial sponsors, a lot of busy urologists don't have the time to really do a detailed family history. Again, we recognize the fact that the majority of patients who are diagnosed with prostate cancer come initially through the urologist's office. And it's very important for urologists to become up to speed on the importance of these genetic tests, but also stepping back from there, looking at the family history, asking questions that we never asked before about potential hereditary cancer syndromes. Because again, these DNA repair mutated genes seem to be very, very familial when it comes to ovarian, breast, melanoma, pancreatic cancer, and Lynch syndrome. So we have to get urologists to start to think about broader questioning. And again, our commercial sponsors who do this testing have given some very nice family history forms. The average urologist is running around seeing 30 or 40 patients a day, may not have the time to sit down, but at least if they get it in the medical record, and when we're reviewing the medical record, get that information in there about a potential inherited syndrome or inherited mutated gene. I think that's an important message for us to get out.
I completely just echo what Dr. Gamela just said. It's just really important to realize that there are hereditary cancer syndromes beyond prostate cancer risk in families, and that these cancers are, encompass a spectrum of cancers, and they can have an impact in hereditary cancer implications for male and female relatives in these families. And so there can be recommendations made for cancer risk and screening and risk reduction for men themselves, but then also their family members.
Of course. I mean, with these guidelines, there's many parts that we could take and, extensively talk about. But given the relevance of the COVID-19 era and the growing role of telemedicine, how do you see the role of video-based genetic counseling changing or evolving or growing moving forward, during this time, but also, looking to the future post-COVID?
Genetic counseling in particular is very conducive to telehealth consultation. Us here in our program at Thomas Jefferson University, we have embraced telehealth. And actually, Jefferson really was one of the first institutions to really put a lot of investment into telehealth technology. So when the pandemic began, our genetics program was able to pivot very rapidly to actually now doing telehealth consultations on literally the majority of our patients. And we had been doing telehealth for quite some time already, but now we're doing it on the majority of our patients. And we get really good feedback about the ease of doing that, the ability to do testing at home and have results return and have all of that done with video-based interface. And that has really been very, very helpful to keep the genetic assessment process going forward. One of the things is that that can be done through genetics programs. As was already mentioned, some of the genetic testing laboratories offer genetic counseling services, and they can also use telephone or telehealth for delivering that information. Most of those services, though, are after testing is done. So they can only really ethically do it in the post-test setting. So the pre-test genetic counseling really still would need to be done with a healthcare provider or genetic specialist to receive the full information and make an informed decision. But I think there are a lot of ways that technology is now trying to be used to help expand access to genetic counseling, and is more important than ever in the COVID era with telehealth, videos, even chatbots, things like that.
There's no question that telehealth and genetic counseling are some of the most powerful partners we have out there, because the testing can be done remotely. You can send your samples into the laboratory. The results can come back into the counselor. And it's just a perfect platform. And again, as Vita mentioned, we've been very fortunate here at Jefferson that about almost 5 years ago now, our leadership did a lot of investing and a lot of proactive work. So we've all been doing telehealth, but as Vita mentioned, with the pandemic, it was just a snap of the fingers to get that telehealth counseling for all care, but in particular for genetic counseling, to ramp that up to almost every patient.
So I just kind of want to do a final question, essentially talking about, your take-home message regarding these guidelines and any remaining questions in this space that you think needs to be addressed going forward. And is there anything in the works regarding maybe a future conference or future guidelines that maybe could address some of the extenuating questions?
So I think some of the take-home messages from the current consensus conference guideline is just to recap the vital necessity and exciting nature of the effect of germline, the clinical role expanding for germline testing in prostate cancer, really now informing precision treatment, precision management, and individualized prostate cancer screening. Central to this issue is how to implement that in healthcare practices spanning various different disciplines, urology, oncology, primary care, genetic counseling, so that men can make an informed decision for genetic testing and proceed with testing and counseling and receiving recommendations on an individual basis. We strongly encourage practices to be proactive in terms of linking with genetic counseling services or genetic centers to think ahead about how to address their patients' genetic evaluation needs and be able to then streamline their process that way. And then the other part of this too is that healthcare providers are increasingly having to think about genetic education. So how can they develop a working knowledge about genetic testing so that they can incorporate this more and more in clinical practice for their patients? There's a lot of remaining questions. As a matter of fact, we put this out there in our consensus paper about the fact that we really don't have adequate information in African-American men who have some of the highest rates of prostate cancer diagnosis and death. And so there really needs to be a lot more research in prostate cancer disparities and in the genetic predisposition to prostate cancer for African-American men. We also talked about more research being needed, as there are going on now, in terms of clinical trials for precision treatment, but also then addressing barriers. So for example, insurance coverage, actionability definition for insurance coverage, and much more public awareness that's needed about this in terms of thinking about prostate cancer germline testing.
I think we have a big challenge when it comes to educating the providers in this area. And this is something, again, that we touched on at the consensus. What's the best way to educate providers? For example, you know, telling a provider that, you know, there's not just one mutated BRCA2 gene, but there's 800 or 900 mutated BRCA2 genes often gets a startled look for someone. I think that we need to do a lot of work on basic concepts and almost take people back to a boot camp, particularly not people in Dr. Geary's world that are doing this all the time, but for individuals such as urologists, radiation oncologists, and non-specialized medical oncologists, primary care doctors, really understanding where we are with precision medicine. Because at the end of the day, this is really precision medicine. Using genomics and genetics to direct treatment is what precision medicine is all about. And again, I think there's many basic concepts beyond simply ordering a blood test. This is not like ordering a CBC or ordering a SED rate or something like that. This has a lot of implications. Vita mentioned that. There's implications to insurance coverage, not for employment purposes or basic insurance, but for disability and long-term care insurance. If you have a gene, you may have some problems with getting that. And that's the GINA law that Vita mentioned earlier. So there's a lot of subtleties here that we need to be aware of. And this is where a strong partnership for something like the GINA laws, partnering with your experienced genetic counselors and medical geneticists, can help a lot. But I think the future is really exciting. This is all about precision medicine, and we're happy to be contributing to the different ways that we can enhance precision medicine in the field of prostate cancer through these consensus meetings. I encourage everybody to take a look at Dr. Geary's 2020 paper in Journal of Clinical Oncology for more details.
Yes, thank you so much, because this type of format for disseminating the information is really crucial, because, you know, we might publish in the academic space, but podcasts that are assigned for scientific audiences, clinical audiences, and for the public are really needed to help disseminate the information. So we're grateful for this.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives on cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.